Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom liYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Zion b'chodesh Iyal, parashas acharei mos kedoshim, Tavshin Pei Aleph 5781, Monday, 19 April 2021. You're listening to Phantom Nation, coming to you from disappointed Israel, crestfallen that Joe Biden has 100% kowtowed to the Iranians instead of, as hoped, getting them to improve the so-called Iran deal of 2015, canceled by the most pro-Israel president ever. And there's a connection. One may make the case, as I do, that Obama's principal endeavor as President of the United States was sticking it to the Jews, which he did throughout his 8 years in office, and he's at it again. 2 weeks ago, the five most powerful anti-Jew nations in Europe met in Vienna, as they did in 2015, to resurrect the wickedly misnamed Iran deal, misnamed because the U.S. got nothing, that's not a deal. All the U.S. got in 2015 was a promise to by Iran to slow its nuclear project, and then after 10 years, they would be able to tear it up and build an atomic bomb to drop on Israel, God forbid. Some deal. Amudei Shekhar, that's Aramaic for a world of lies, a description of human society most of the time. And now that Obama is back in power, that is, behind the scenes, pulling the strings of Biden, who was never noted for his brains, but his criminality, and is now noted for his senility. In this week's edition of Phantom Nation, we will examine Biden's latest plagiarizing of a whopping Obama lie and really theft of what does not belong to him and his fellow Muslims, namely the founding of America, in which not only did Muslims have no part, they were in the first generation of the Republic the number one menace to the infant United States of America. The revolution ended, and the country was sunk in war debt, and one way out was shipping to Europe more than ever the commodities of America's natural resources. Only now, post-revolution, American merchant ships were no longer protected by the great British Navy. The U.S. had no navy for the first decade of independence. The British also paid protection money called tribute to these mistakenly called Barbary pirates. When that was a nickname, they were not pirates. In historical truth, they were Muslim holy warriors, the official navies of recognized Muslim powers. And we will get started after the following messages from IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day. Zion b'chodesh Iyal, parashas acharei mos kedoshim, Tavshin Pei Aleph 5781, Monday, 19 April 2021. You're listening to the Phantom Nation, coming to you from Israel, where the word from anonymous sources yesterday was that the Israeli government sees the United States in Vienna with the other anti-Jew peoples restarting Obama's death wish for this country, God forbid, and going along with them. The fantasy here was that the Israeli government might be able to work with the Biden and company government, but now that's clearly wishful thinking. Israel's security agencies see the U.S., quote, completely folding, 100%, to demands being made by the Iranians, who have been attacking and killing Americans for 40 years. In 2015, I remember, an MSM piece on the talks in Vienna, on this upcoming Iran deal, describing John Kerry there advocating for the Iranian position. in opposition to the Europeans, who were more adamant than America against them. This makes sense, actually, though. In the 1970s, John Kerry supported the communists in Vietnam. And then in 2015, he was doing it again, betraying his country, this time with the Iranians. Kerry is today, I think, the wizard of climate change or something like that. And in his place at the table in Vienna starting 2 weeks ago was probably Robert Malley, the offspring of two Jewish apostates who became Jew-hating communists, for Jew hatred is right there in the beginning of communism. The first communist, Karl Marx, who wrote the Communist Manifesto, he said capitalism was controlled by Jew bankers. Communism is inherently anti-Semitic, and Malley is the product of a New York City Jewess who in the late 1950s and early 60s worked for the communist Fellah terrorists in Algeria, and an Egyptian Jew father, likewise a radical journalist. David Horowitz the other day reported that in 2010, during Obama's second year as president, Malley addressed the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and called on the administration to, quote, unveil a set of parameters that included the creation of a Palestinian state along the 1967 borders, close quote. Right there, he exposed his ignorance, and therefore he has no business calling himself a Middle East expert, and nobody has any business listening to him. In 1967, Israel had no borders, only ceasefire lines. Those like him, like George Orwell's Winston Smith in 1984, rewrite history for political gain in the present, with no fidelity to the facts of history. Anyone who speaks of the 1967 borders exposes his ignorance of a basic fact about the violence here. Malley also called for the deployment of third-party armed forces in Judea and Samaria. Of course, he didn't call them Judea and Samaria. And the evacuation of hundreds of thousands of Jews from homes they have every right to live in that they paid for, to live in peace and security. Anyone who thinks foreign soldiers who don't know Arabic would do a better job of keeping the peace than the IDF is an idiot who knows nothing of the real world and this world. And as for calling for the uprooting of hundreds of thousands of Jews from homes they bought and to drive them from their communities and their synagogues, this calls to mind the end of Fiddler on the Roof when the little Jewish shtetl village of Anatevka is ordered destroyed and all the Jews told to go live someplace else. Ordering all the hundreds of thousands of Jews in Judea and Samaria living in peaceful communities, having dispossessed no ancient Palestinian. This is in a class with the expulsion from Spain, ordered in March of 1492. If this is actually carried out, the evacuation of all Jews in Judea and Samaria, this would be even larger than the number of refugees in August of 1492, those who fled Spain. The day after, no Jew was allowed to live in Spain, and if caught, could be lawfully murdered. Malley also called for Israel to hand the Golan Heights back to Syria because he said, quote, it was unlikely that Syria would sponsor militant groups or destabilize the region once an agreement is reached, close quote. And at this point, yours truly can only pause slack-jawed in wonderment and how this ignoramus about Israel and the Arabs came to be regarded as an expert on the Middle East. The man obviously has no empathy for the hundreds of thousands of Jews he wants to drive from their homes and turn them into refugees in their own tiny country. This man has no heart, leastwise for Jews, which should not surprise being raised by two hostile to Judaism and Israel apostates. And when he said Syria is unlikely to sponsor militant groups, notice he did not call them terrorist organizations, or to destabilize the region, I want to know what his sources were for this Olympian judgment. The man is functionally an imposter who hasn't got a clue as to the culture of the Muslims here, of the Arabs, the Iranians, the Syrians, the Turks, the Yemenis, Hamas and Hezbollah, these murderous Jew-hating fraternities. Now, that's all these two groups are, you know. Hamas is the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood. Hezbollah is the Shiite counterpart, both dedicated to the destruction of Israel, God forbid. Both organizations have salaried employees who wake up every day and go to work for an organization whose purpose is destroying the state of free Jews. Every morning they go to work where the principal product is hatred of the Jewish state because its very existence is an insult to Islam. Like drawing a cartoon caricature of Muhammad that can get your head chopped off. Some Israelis here for sure thought it would be possible to work with the new administration in Washington, the Biden administration, and blame Netanyahu for mishandling the situation, not realizing that in reality this is not the Biden administration. This is Obama's third term. In Vienna, for the last 2 weeks, that old gang of hostile anti-Jew European nations, Russia, Britain, France, Germany, and a representative of the European Union, whose current foreign policy czar, like the previous one, is a shameless anti-Jew Spaniard, a Roman Catholic from Catalonia. Every one of these countries has a history of virtually satanic cruelty to us Jews, and here they are again, smiling on Iran's desire to build an atomic bomb, and, as their own leaders have fantasized in public, drop it on Israel, God forbid. Critics here, addicted to Bibi bashing, claim it did not help that Israel hit the Natanz facility again and even boasted of doing that. Whatever the case on that score, Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Gabi Ashkenazi are of one mind in saying plainly, Iran is anti-Semitic, and Israel will do whatever is necessary to defend itself. The U.S. Turning its back on Israel now that the covert Muslim jihadi Obama is back in power will not stop Israel from doing what it has to do. The restarting of the deceitfully misnamed Iran deal of 2015, annulled, canceled by President Trump, may be inevitable. With Obama back in power, the so-called deal in 2015 was seen as his crowning achievement as a foreign policy master, remaking the Middle East, which he did in part by sending $150 billion to the Muslim kidnappers in Tehran in 1979, who held hostage 52 U.S. diplomats for over a year. More than a few of them today still suffering after 40 years with PTSD. And since then, the Iranians have been behind the additional killing and wounding of thousands of U.S. men in uniform that did not stop Obama from sending them $150 billion. Barack Hussein Obama was not president of the United States for more than 10 minutes into his inaugural address in 2009 when he slapped the Jewish people in the face, but did it so subtly few noticed. And the following day, his first working day as president, he entered the Oval Office and asked to place his first phone call as president. And to who? The previous year, the country had suffered an economic crisis not seen since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and it was still in it, but Obama chose not to call any experts in economics and finance. No, it was to the anti-Semitic, Holocaust-denying terrorist Mahmoud Abbas, a.k.a. Abu Mazen, head of the Fatah Jew-killing cult. And now, Obama's back in power.
everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Yeah, Barack Hussein Obama attacked the Jews in his inaugural address in 2009 when he did not speak the cliché that America is a Judeo-Christian culture. What he did was inject Islam into the relationship. He said America was a great country of Christians and Muslims, comma, Jews and Hindus. In this formulation, the Jews are shoved back to the third position, with the Hindus truly reviled by Muslims for being idol worshippers. Obama's hostility to Israel was apparent throughout his first 8 years. For his last act at the UN, he let the Security Council rule that every Jew on formerly Jordanian-held territory is a criminal, and ruled that the holiest site, ground zero of the Jewish nation, belongs to the phantom Palestinians. Obama for sure had no problem telling his ambassadress at the UN, Samantha Power, to do this. The chances are excellent that when she heard the news, she smiled from ear to ear. This anti-Semitic native of Ireland, whose people are among, in Europe, the most anti-Semitic. She, the authoress of an anti-Semitic book on genocides in the plural, in order to deflate the uniqueness of what was done to us. 20 years ago, in an interview, Power said that even if it meant, quote, alienating a domestic constituency of tremendous political and financial support, wink, wink, the Jews, quote, the U.S. should stop sending billions of dollars to service Israel's military and should invest in the new state of Palestine. At the United Nations, in her job, she at times wallowed in the muck of moral equivalence between the almost non-existent settler violence against Arabs with the satanic murders they commit against us without end, and even name their schools, parks, and streets after their murderers. Samantha Power is back on Obama's payroll in some capacity. That is Biden's payroll. Yeah, Obama's back in town, back in power, pulling the strings of that impossibly corrupt and criminal inferior human being, Joe Biden. Evidence of that was on display last Monday when Biden sent Muslims greetings for Ramadan. That's their 40 days of half-fasts, a concept plagiarized from Judaism, like everything else in Islam, and included the following language, which is almost word-for-word plagiarized from the speech in Cairo, delivered by Obama in April 2009, after barely 3 months in office. The White House webpage on that speech afterwards made it seem as if he spoke at Cairo University, when that was a lie. The lying never stops with these people. It took place in Al-Azhar, the historic Muslim seminary, attended by one terrorist cult preacher after another. In his speech, Obama said, quote, Muslims have enriched our country, meaning America, since our founding. They are as diverse and vibrant as the America they helped to build. Another lie. Only this was more than an ordinary lie. It was a Muslim lie, because what Obama was doing was claiming American history as part of Islam's cultural heritage. It's their history, too, they seem to be saying. It's their history, too, as they claim the site of the Jews' temples to be rightfully theirs as well. He was saying Islam has as much right to America as the English and other Northern European Christians, with a sprinkling of Jews who were the founders, not one of them a Muslim. What Obama was doing was as old as Islam, whose prophet claimed to be the last of the prophets of the Jews in their Bible, and in fact, Muslims believe all of them were really Muslims for believing in the God of Ibrahim. Ibrahim was a Muslim too, they say, like his firstborn son Ismail, who Ibrahim bound for a sacrifice. Musa, that's Moshe, he was a Muslim too, as today Arabs in Judea and Samaria say Jesus was a Palestinian. Really, the first Palestinian martyr victim of the evil Jews. What Obama was doing then, and the senile idiot Biden was claiming, was that America is rightfully theirs too, and never mind the perfect absence of any Muslims on American soil, perhaps even into the 20th century. The historical truth is that if the Founding Fathers thought anything about Islam, they were completely hostile. For the first 40 years of the Republic, one major foreign policy headache was the so-called Barbary Pirates, whose principal activity was hijacking infidel ships on the high seas and enslaving the passengers and crews and selling them back for ransom. For 1,000 years, in the four principal Muslim powers on the north coast of Africa, there were thousands of European Christian slaves and black African pagan slaves as well. In truth, the Muslims were not pirates at all in the usual sense. Real pirates do not spread prayer mats on their decks several times daily to pray to Mecca, as these did. They called themselves Mujahideen, not pirates. Their vessels were not pirate ships flying the skull and bones, but the green flag of Islam. They were the official navies of recognized Muslim powers, for whom the jihad was eternal, and they had the right to kidnap and enslave infidels until ransomed. This belief was taught to the principal author of the Declaration of American Independence, Thomas Jefferson, in person by a Muslim sheikh from Tripoli, Libya. Jefferson spent 5 years in Paris, mostly as ambassador to the court of Louis XVI, whose principal task as ambassador was trying to, and failing for 5 years, liberate American hostage slaves in Algiers. In one meeting with a representative of the Pasha in Tripoli, who was asking for 1/6 of the U.S. budget in 1786, not to begin capturing U.S. merchant ships, Jefferson heard this justification for kidnapping and enslaving, which, of course, appalled him. Jefferson was a prince of the Enlightenment who coined the phrase a wall of separation between church and state. The thought of people being kidnapped and enslaved for religious motives horrified him. After Jefferson returned from France, he became the first American Secretary of State in 1790 and submitted to Congress as his first major report the necessity of building a navy to deal with the menace of Islam. And when he retired from office 3 years later, his last report was over the recent hijacking of 11 U.S. merchant ships in the Mediterranean and the enslaving of over 120 Americans. As a result of that attack, the stock market in New York City collapsed. Transatlantic transportation came to a halt. Shipyards up and down the American coast ceased to operate. The impact was similar economically to what 9/11 would do 2 centuries later. A terrible blow at the American economy. As a result of the attack, the U.S. government finally decided to build a navy. Americans have the Muslims to thank for beginning a navy. Not only did Muslims not contribute to America's founding generation, they cost the country mountains of money. The United States, in order to liberate its citizens in that period, did pay ransom and even built a warship as a gift to the Dey of Algiers, who at one point had over 100 Americans enslaved in its city. After the so-called quasi-war with France in the Caribbean in the late 1790s, the first American war overseas began in 1801 against Tripoli, Libya, under President Thomas Jefferson, the father of American liberalism, who was the number one leading hawk for war against Islam. The transformation of American liberals from enemies of Islamic barbarism to today's so-called liberals, whose standard bearer in his first day in office 3 months ago, declared boys can play on girls' teams and use their locker rooms. It just shows you how degenerate and corrupt American liberalism has become after 200 years. So, when Joe Biden parrots, truly parrots, Obama's rape of history in claiming Islam's contribution to America, it was in a class, if not magnitude, with Holocaust denial. And that is because Biden is just the dummy to his ventriloquist master, the secret jihadi, who occupied the Oval Office for 8 years, is now back in power and influence, albeit behind the scenes, with many of his former acolytes working in the new administration, every one of them an anti-Jew on record. The U.S. is in a sad state, sickened with a heavy dose of fear. The current administration and their cohorts in big tech have become nothing less than fascists, a word I never use, because others do all the time, especially on the left with no knowledge of its history. Now, though, with the latest Jack Dorsey at Twitter censoring another New York Post scoop and the banning of James O'Keefe of the Project Veritas for exposing the corruption at CNN, Dorsey truly deserves the description of fascist, keeping people from expressing their opinions in public so that others can hear them. Cancel culture is a modern euphemism for fascism.
Hola, Neshama.
Aleluve te cachofar. Aleluve nebel vejinor. Aleluve te cachofar. Aleluve nebel vejinor. Aleluve tofumagol. Aleluve mini beugam. Aleluve tzilzei leishama. Aleluve tzilzei.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time, and it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Speaking before of the Arabs and Islam, about which Middle East expert Rob Malley knows nothing, and Obama's stealing in Cairo, like a Bedouin thief of American history, as belonging to Muslims, as it does to Christians and Jews, in Jerusalem, with the news of another purchase of an Arab house by a Jew in the former Jordanian sector, as it used to be called, before 67, the Muslims preached on their allegedly moderate, peace-loving PATV, a regurgitation of the umpteenth time the Islamic prohibition on selling land to Jews has been heard in the land. And the reason for that is that all the land in Philistine, they say, and certainly Al-Quds, Jerusalem, belongs to Islam. The Jews may claim this is their promised land, but of course, if that were true, Allah would not have allowed believers to overrun their holiest site and make it their own. The Muslims are the true chosen people whose rights extend way beyond the Jewish claim to this one tiny country. The Torah teaches that the Jews had the right to evict the Canaanites and related peoples. By contrast, Muslims claim the right to overrun and rule the whole world. One of the PA preachers, a Sharia judge, responding to the news of another sale of a house to a Jew, sermonized that, quote, Allah told all of humanity that Philistine is a pure right of its Muslim owners, close quote. See what I mean? Just like the ancient Midrash that postulates the essential character of the sons of Ishmael to be that of a thief, there's not one original idea in Islam. All has been stolen from the Jews. This land was given by Allah to believers in the one true faith, they insist. The very ideas that this is a special country and that God can assign it to a particular nation are both stolen. Islam is a religion lacking the commandment, don't steal. It is no accident that Islam is world famous for a punishment unknown elsewhere in the world at this time. Steal something in the homeland of Islam in Saudi Arabia, and Islam will condemn you to have your hand chopped off. Who, outside of Islam, knows anything of Sharia law, but the whole world knows this one Muslim punishment for the crime of theft, because Ishmaelites seem to have a soft spot for it, a predilection for it. In David Lean's the classic film Lawrence of Arabia, one crucial episode is a raid on a Turkish military train during World War I that Lawrence gets the Arabs to attack and wreck, which they do. But when Lawrence then tries to organize them to conduct another operation, the response is just to, each man individually, make off with an object or two. Lawrence thought they were freedom fighters, but discovered all they wanted to do was loot. And in a related news item, the Arabs in Judea and Samaria are about to conduct their second national election in 13 years, an imitation of Israel's 37 parties that one could vote for last month. They have 36 parties to choose from. Only, unlike Israel's dozens, almost a third of theirs have logos that display the PA map in which Israel is not there. Everything west of the river to the sea is Palestine, because these parties officially in their platforms deny the right of Israel to exist at all. And I await the day when Israel begins to fight fire with fire. They deny our right to our own independent Jewish majority state in this country, and we in turn should expose the lie that they are Palestinians, a nation with an equal right to an independent state in our ancient promised land. Israel, official Israel, should declare it does not recognize a Palestinian people, for the simple reason is there no record of such a nation here, and in any case, as no one can describe the emperor's new clothes because there's nothing there, no one can describe the content of the Palestinian national identity. No one can speak about their ancient Palestinian language, like Hebrew, because there never was one. No one can describe a unique garment, like a Japanese kimono, Mexican sombrero, or Scottish kilt that is recognizably Palestinian in the big cities of the world with so many different restaurants serving dozens of different national dishes, so there are no Palestinian restaurants. And of course, there's not one book of history in any library on the planet narrating the allegedly archaic history of this putatively primeval people. This anti-Semitic fantasy that there was a Palestinian people here, whose country was stolen from them by the Jews, has poisoned minds the world over, and no less ignorant, albeit well-intentioned, pro-Israel Jews as well in the West who have fallen victim to the lie. The JNS site last week reported on a video produced by some pro-Israel academics at UC Berkeley that purports to defend Israel but also fosters the lie that the creation of Israel resulted in, quote, the displacement of 750,000 Palestinians and the fact that to this day a Palestinian state has not been established and most Palestinians remain refugees, close quote. There are three egregious historical howlers here. Number one, at most 60,000, not 750,000 Arabs, were forcibly displaced from Jaffa, Lod, Ramleh during the 1948 war launched by the Arabs against the Jews. The Jews fought back, and if some Arabs lost their homes, too bad. They should not have started the fighting. Israel did drive out Yitzhak Rabin in command, some 30,000, from Lod because of its proximity to the one and only two-lane blacktop next to the one and only airport in the country at those days running between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. It was a strategic necessity. Jaffa was lost as well when Eitzel, in English the Irgun, bested the Arabs in fighting over that important port city, and for that victory too, Israel has nothing to apologize. In truth, most of the roughly speaking 600,000 Arabs who fled the fighting did so of their own volition, never seeing an Israeli soldier. They were overwhelmingly, another historical howler here, not Palestinians, but migrant laborers from all over the Middle East who did not want to get caught in the middle of the fighting. And as for some of them today, still being refugees, please ask yourself the likely actuarial history of these people in the UNRWA camps. Say a 20-year-old in 1948 who ran from the fighting that year, 73 years later, is probably no longer alive. There are almost no more refugees, and UNRWA remains the biggest welfare scam in history. How sad that these otherwise well-intentioned pro-Israelites at Berkeley have no idea that the entirety of the Palestinian National Liberation Movement is one big sulfurous anti-Semitic lie. And how annoying that the government of Israel has never attacked and demolished these lies. Israel's military engineers can come up with the Iron Dome system to shoot down the Muslims' murder missiles, but not their lies that have blanketed the world. The Oslo Peace Brainstorm of 1993 was the brainchild of Dr. Joseph Balin, Ph.D., who knew nothing of Arab culture and was blind to the lives of the PLO that he negotiated with. The Oslo Abomination Peace Plan was premised on the self-induced secular Israeli fantasy that all the Palestinians wanted was just Judea and Samaria, which flies in the face of reams of speeches by Arabs perfectly clear in expressing their desire to destroy Israel, God forbid, as it existed 1948-1967. Fatah was founded in 1959 and had nothing to say about statehood for Palestinians in Judea and Samaria, at that time owned by Jordan. The Fatah terror cultists, the core of the so-called Palestinian Authority to this very day, APA, invented by Dr. Joseph Balin, Ph.D., they remain Fatah people founded by eight Muslim brothers, Arafat included. Their real goal has never been statehood for Palestinians, but the Arabic tradition and desire to loot and pillage, in this case all the wealth we Jews have created here over the last century and a half, and the Islamic obligation to return us Jews to being an oppressed and humiliated minority, under the rule of believers in the one true faith of Ibrahim. Islam claims to be the final revelation of the religion of Ibrahim. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Phantom Nation, which may, in the not-too-distant future, have to go on an extended hiatus, though the subscription service will continue. Say, stay tuned on that score. Anyway, that's it for this week. Please buy the Kindle version of my book, Phantom Nation, and receive a free 3-month subscription to my thrice weekly programs. Buy the 2-volume hardcover box set version and receive free a year subscription. This book is like no other on Israel and is described by many as a book that is hard once you start reading it to put it down despite its length. Okay, the music you heard was provided by Heart and Will. That's the name of the album by Carmina Orr and Hilik Frank, who also do the theme music. And then you heard Glantz, Yehuda Glantz, and then you heard singing Psalm 150. And as usual, we conclude with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Batikul. Shabbat Hold on.
Love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.